talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I ain't usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is January 12th, 2016, our first show of the year. We were out last week. We're here to kick off a whole new year of movie talk.
Partying too hard on New Year's Eve, right. So we couldn't make it last week.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. All right, so we got a lot of movies to look forward to this year, and we're going to talk about the worst movies of last year. We talked about the best movies our last show 2 weeks ago. But first, as we always do, let's talk about the top 10 at the box office. How's Daddy's Home doing, Michelle?
Actually, surprisingly well. It's been a big hit for Paramount Pictures, which we will get to in a second. But right now, here are the top 12 domestic weekend box office results from our friends over at Rentrak. Number one was Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it made a measly 41.
Actually, these are the actual results. So it made $42.3 million, okay. From 4,134 theaters. J.J. Abrams' film continues its record-breaking sprint, adding another $145 million this weekend globally and beginning its box office journey in China. The film is now the third highest-grossing movie of all time behind Avatar and Titanic on a worldwide basis after just 26 days in cinemas. It's still breaking records.
Cool.
Right now it's at, well, as of the other day, it was at $1.73 billion total, but that's gone up.
So they'll probably hop over the big boat in the next week or so, and then onto those blue skin avatars.
That's right. That's more than the lottery.
Oh, my goodness.
But it looks like Revenant's hot on its heels.
Yeah, number two, directed by Alejandro G. Iñárritu, The Revenant came in at $39.8 million, playing at 3,300 theaters. Fox's film is off to a blazing wide release start, taking in $58.2 million this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In just 11 territories around the globe, the film is expected to land DiCaprio as first into the Oscar race. The film just won the Golden Globe for Best Picture Drama, Director, and Actor.
Well, I was going to say, Leo's got a big following overseas. You said it's just in, 11 territories, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I think that the money will keep rolling in as it expands to more countries, probably.
Yeah, it's playing in over 3,000 theaters. Here. So, at number three, Daddy's Home brought in $15 million. It's standing now at $116 million domestic, so in a very solid overseas $38 million. Once again, it's a big surprise hit for Paramount Pictures.
It's a very funny movie, I saw.
Yeah, I wonder if it's doing better than what the last team up was, the other guys.
Probably.
About the same or maybe a little better, I'm thinking.
It's playing at 3,400 theaters, so that's a huge...
That's a lot wide opening.
Number four is The Force from Focus Features.
We saw that.
You did. The film debuted at $12.7 million. This is Jason Zeta's first film. It had a $10 million budget, and it's playing at over 2,400 locations.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that some more in a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, we will. Universal Pictures Sisters, it brought in $7.2 million. Overall, it's brought in a respectable $73.9 million since its opening last month. And number six is The Hateful Eight from the Weinstein Company. That brought in only $6.4 million. It's plummeted 60% from its wide release bow, despite adding 464 theaters. And it's playing at 2,938 theaters right now.
Not so good, huh?
No, Tarantino's total stands at $41.5 million.
Yeah. It's a backlap from the cop bashing.
I think it's the length of it. Yeah. I mean, they can't get as many screenings a day.
That's true.
At number seven is The Big Short from Paramount Pictures. That came in at $6.2 million, and it's still playing at 2,500 plus theaters. 20th Century Fox's Alvin and the Chipmunks Road Chip came in at number eight with $5.5 million. Number nine is Joy from 20th Century Fox. And number 10 is Concussion from Sony Pictures. That's at $3.1 million. That film is still playing at 2,000 plus theaters. Number 11, Warner Brothers Pictures Point Break came in at $2 million. However, it's crashed hard, dropping 69%.
It's already at the dollar show over here.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. It's only brought in $26 million total. And rounding it out, number 12, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 from Lionsgate came in at $2 million. Two side notes. Focus Features, The Danish Girl, is fading fast, unlike last year's Theory of Everything. The movie's only brought in $7.5 million total, and it won't get a wide release. And secondly, Weinstein's Carol expanded into 525 theaters this weekend, but managed just $1.4 million. So its total stands at $6.9 million total. That's it for the box office.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got some movies to review. Revenant and Anomalisa we have to review. It seems like we've reviewed those, but technically we haven't. We've been talking about them so much, and all of us saw those quite a while ago.
Oh, yes. They wanted to get both of them in for Oscar consideration and the end-of-the-year awards and things like that. So we got to see them, quite early in December.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with Anomalisa.
What is it to be human? What is it to ache? What is it to be alive? Each person you speak to has had a day. Some of the days have been good, some bad. Each person you speak to has had a childhood. Each has a body. Each body has aches.
That's an interesting movie that opens this Friday. Jim will be reviewing that at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Yeah. You know, they say, it's unlike anything you've seen before, and that becomes sort of a cliche. But with Anomalisa, I would say it's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
So true.
It's got this weird dreamlike quality. A lot of people are automatically saying claymation. Well, it's not claymation. No, it's more like puppet animation, probably closer to the Rankin-Bass puppet animation specials like Rudolph and things like
Mad Monster Party.
Oh, yes. And even closer to Paranorman and Leica Studios product. But this is from Starburns Industries, the people that gave Cartoon Network Moral Oral and Frankenhole and did the special animated sequence for Community a while back. And Community's Dan Harmon is one of the producers. And it's just fascinating. It's co-directed by Duke Johnson, an animator here from St. Louis, and Charlie Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the brain of Charlie.
Yeah,
it kind of owes a lot. There's a couple of sequences that reminded me of Inside Inside John Malkovich.
Being John Malkovich.
Yes. And I always confuse those. The title on that, and some of his other work adaptation, and it's kind of off kilter. It's based on, I believe, a stage play that he wrote, but they actually performed it on radio, and I understand in Los Angeles with the same vocal cast. And it's about this disaffected fellow. He's a writer. He's a motivational speaker. He's voiced by David Thewlis.
Yeah.
And he's arriving in Cincinnati for a conference that he's going to speak at about customer service.
Yeah. Well, he's written a book on customer service, but he can't really relate to people very well himself, which is kind of an irony there.
And it just, without giving too much away, it just seems like everybody's the same to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears a distinct voice, and that is Jennifer Jason Leigh as Lisa, who's one of the attendees at the conference at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I read in the paper about the name of the hotel, the Fregoli Hotel. Yeah. It's actually a psychological term for people that believe every other person is the same.
The all the other voices are done by
Tom Noonan.
Yeah. Which is so clever. So really well done.
And they all have the same kind of facial features. Mm-hmm. The men, women, the children, all of them. It's a bizarre looking film. These characters walk around, and you could almost close your eyes or squint your eyes and think you're looking at live action footage, but it is all in stop motion animation.
Yeah.
The story takes some really bizarre turns.
To say the least, it
earns its R rating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you that. Don't let the animation make you think that it's okay to bring the kids to it.
Not quite as raunchy as Team America, though.
Not quite, but. But it goes some places you aren't expecting. That's for certain.
And
say all the voice work is really terrific. I singled out Jennifer Jason Leigh when I was putting together my best moments of the year list.
Let's talk about that. You and I, our favorite moment.
One of our favorite moments from cinema from last year is her rendition of Girls Just Want to Have Fun is pretty amazing.
It's really one of the top. Mm-hmm. Yes,
but it's not a fantasy. There's one dream sequence that just captures the syntax of a dream almost perfectly. I mean, he goes down and there's this pit. He goes down to meet the manager of the hotel, and there's this pit in the middle of his office. So he gets in like a golf cart and drives around the pit, even though it's only about 12 feet away, which is like something you would dream.
Oh, yes. And well, the whole sort of sequence a, getting having to walk through all the receptionists to get to there and them all kind of looking at him. And it's
a great scene.
It's a great well, it's a lot of great scenes. Yeah. And it's very well, some people kind of be put off by, you know, the oddness of it, but I think if you've got a, you know, open mind, you want to try something new, it's a great choice.
And it's only about what, 80 minutes long?
Yeah, about 80, 90 minutes long.
I mean, even from the first trailer's cut were, you know, just the trailer's like so fit into the movie, and it's got a great score, another great score. Carter Burwell has had just some terrific scores this year, so it's another fine score.
What else did
he
score this year?
Carol.
Carol, that's right.
Yeah, it's very nice score. And very well done.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, it's a great movie. It made my top 10 list. Jim and Michelle liked it as well, so we highly recommend Anomalisa. So look for Jim's review Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Let's move on to Revenant, another movie we saw weeks and weeks and weeks ago.
What happened?
We did what we had to do.
He was buried right.
All I had was my boy. And he took him from me, you understand? He's afraid. He knows how far I came to find him.
Everyone else is just catching up, too. And that's another great movie. Leonardo DiCaprio plays Hugh Glass, a fur trapper. And,
sort of the guide of this fur trappers.
Maybe around 1830s northwest United States. And he and his crew get attacked by Indians in the opening scene, which is a really amazing scene. I've watched that scene several times on my screen or DVD.
Yeah,
and there's two or three long shots within that scene.
Yeah, I was wondering with your screener, it didn't look too dark, because I've heard you know, some reports from people that say it's, you know, it's tough to watch because it's all shot in natural light.
Yeah,
you didn't have that problem when you saw it at the theater.
No,
I didn't have a problem at the screening, the critic screening of it that way. I was able to make out all that was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to look better on Blu-ray, of course.
Oh yeah,
but it did look a little muddy on DVD, but not too bad. Then, of course, he gets attacked by the bear, and that's a famous sequence. Wasn't the bear on the Golden Globes the other night?
Jonah Hill was the bear.
Yes.
And
that's a really amazing sequence. That won best scene from the St. Louis Film Critics Association.
Sure.
It's pretty astounding. Yeah.
And I'm sure Emmanuel Lubezki will receive his third Oscar
for the cinematography. Yes.
Yeah, he's won back to back. So they're thinking he's.
I think Mad Max is going to win best cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. It's a tough call. But they should mention that one of the two of the fur trappers, they're sort of led by this sort of military officer played by Domhnall Gleeson, who's having a heck of a year. It's like his fourth high profile movie in a row this year, and there's sort of a wild card in the trappers, and that's the Fitzgerald, I think is his name, played by Tom Hardy. And it's a pretty great performance. There's a chance he could get a supporting, but
about the year he's having.
A pretty good year too. But after the bear attack, you know, the Leo's character, Hugh Glass, is just, you know, clinging to life, but Domhnall will not leave him to die. He wants to to go on with the rest of the trappers. So Leo's son, he has a half Pawnee son, I believe, wants to stay with his father and try to mend him and get him back into good health. And Tom Hardy volunteers to stay behind
with the kid from We're the Millers.
Yeah, Will Poulter.
Is that his name?
Yeah. But, of course, you can tell right from almost the start the Hardy is up to no good.
I didn't trust that guy.
But he's got a great monologue where he tells Will Poulter about how he escaped getting scalped, but not without some damage being done to his hairline.
Yeah, he got half scalped.
So the Leo pretty much has to claw his way out of the grave, and he goes after Hardy for to seek his revenge and just to survive.
Yep.
Really, and it's a sort of a man against the elements for a lot of it. And there's just some amazingly beautiful sequences, but boy, you're gonna feel cold watching it.
So, is he deserving of the Oscar?
Is Leo?
Yes. What would you say?
I would say. Yes.
Okay.
I don't
Tom?
Know. I would say no. I think when you think Oscar-winning actors, you think great dialogue and great speeches and great lines. What's his greatest line in this film? He really doesn't have any. He huffs and puffs.
Yeah, he does talk. He's not doing a Holly Hunter from the piano, so no, he has some lines in it.
He does, of course,
she won the Oscar for that, for a speechless performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, go all the way back to Jane Wyman for Johnny Belinda, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But there is such an intensity to his performance, and he really makes you believe that this guy is struggling for his life, and he's just determined not to give in to the pain and the cold. And it's a pretty astounding. You know,
I think he may win the Oscar. I just think this isn't his best performance. I think he's been nominated, what, 6 times now and hasn't won, and maybe they think it's his turn.
Right, and that's where some are saying, you know, he's overdue.
Yeah, I don't know who from this year I would pick over him.
Matt Damon.
I would come close for Ian McKellen for Mr. Holmes.
Yeah.
But,
I think Matt Damon stands a pretty good chance if it wasn't for Leo.
Yeah.
Leo and Matt have both, you know, they've made a lot of money for Hollywood. They've been nominated several times before. And
they're both very, very well-liked.
Yeah, they're well-liked. And
everyone wants to work with them, so.
Yeah. You know, it looks like it may be Leo's year.
Could be.
All right, so we highly recommend The Revenant, one of the very best films of 2015. Was it on your top 10 list, Jim?
I believe so, yeah. I think
was it on your top 10 list, Michelle?
No.
It was number 3 on my top 10 list after Mad Max and Hateful Eight. Okay, the first movie of 2016 opened last Friday, and that was The Forest.
The forest is very dangerous. Do not leave the path.
Oh my God, that's our tent.
Yes!
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 You cannot stay after dark.
I'm not leaving without my sister.
Yes!
At night, people see bad things.
The Forest starred Natalie Dormer is a woman named Sarah who's living in America and gets a phone call that her sister, who's been living in Japan as a teacher, her twin sister, I should say, has disappeared into the forest. Do you remember the name of the forest?
Oh, gosh. It is a Japanese
name. One of those Japanese words. Anyways, this is a true place, this forest, where people go to commit suicide. Yeah. In fact, you know, there's another movie about this forest that's coming out. Did you know that? Gus Van Sant has directed with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh.
Yeah.
No idea.
Mm-hmm. I think the word forest is in the title of the film, but I can't remember what it's called. It's coming out later this year. The Forest is a horror film.
And of course, you know, Natalie Dormer's character in the U.S. Knows that Jess is alive just because the other twins, and if she were dead, she'd know it.
Yeah.
So she has to travel over there.
Yeah. I mean, I was saying yesterday, you know, if I was going to make a movie about a haunted forest where people go to die, I think I would have opened it with somebody wandering into the forest and dying or killing themselves. So that's how you establish that this forest is a place where people go to commit suicide. But in this lame movie, The Forest, it opens with her getting a phone call. So the entire background of the forest is explained to her in a phone call, which isn't very cinematic. She travels out there, and she goes to the visitor center at this forest, and they say, oh, yeah, we got your sister down here in the morgue. So this visitor center, I think the morgue was like between, you know, right next to the drinking fountain in the ladies' room. So they go down there. And then there's a couple decomposed corpses down in the basement of the visitor center, and she lifts the sheet, and there's this rotted, horrifying-looking corpse. She goes, that's not my sister. My sister's still out there. And I go, you can't go out there alone. So she goes to this bar, and what's that actor's name?
Oh, Taylor Kinney?
Yeah, this hunky, blue-eyed actor just happens to be sitting at the bar and hits on her. And
Lady Gaga's fiance, I believe.
Okay, well, good for them. I wish them well. Yeah, anyway.
Maybe she'll keep him off the screen. Yeah. Off of bad movies. Maybe.
So he says, I know all about this forest. In fact, I just happen to be taking a tour there tomorrow with this Japanese guide. So you can tag along if you'd like. So sure enough, that couple and this Japanese guide go into the forest the next day. They find the sister's tent.
And they say, well, it's getting dark. Yeah, you want to be here after dark. Yeah, so let's go back. And she says,
I'm not leaving without my sister. She says that about 5 times during the movie.
Kenny, I wish I could recall the character name, but I'll just call him Taylor. He says,
it was Liam, I believe.
Liam, okay. Well, I'll stay with you.
Yeah.
Was her name
of course.
Hope? Was that her?
No, her name was Sarah.
Sarah. That would be too corny.
Jessie was her sister's. Josie was her sister's.
She hopes that her sister's still alive.
Wow.
So then, you know, so far so good, but then.
Oh, you're giving a lot. But
then they just start seeing ghosts and people start jumping at the camera and she has these visions and.
Lots of scary people.
Yeah, and schoolgirls with wet black hair and popping their eyes out and opening their mouths wider than humanly possible. And it just goes on and on and on, and it's really, really stupid, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's just another lame horror film. I'm not sure why I had high hopes for this thing. But it's PG-13, so it's sort of bloodless. It's not scary at all unless you are easily scared by, you know, things jumping into frame all of a sudden.
Sound bumps, boom.
Yeah,
boom,
a lot of that. Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Natalie Dormer's okay. I guess this isn't going to hurt her career too badly.
Still got the big following from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
And previously from The Tudors.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But this is nothing that's going to be high on her resume. That's for certain.
Yeah. So we do not recommend The Forest, because a couple more of new movies opened this weekend, including 13 Hours. Is it The Heroes of Benghazi? Is that the full title? The Soldiers of Benghazi. Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Yeah. There you go.
We need immediate assistance. We are overrun.
State's under attack. Let's go, man. State's under attack. Let's go. We gotta move.
If you do not get here soon, we are all gonna die.
You have a U.S. ambassador at risk.
The ambassador is in his safe haven. You're not the first responders. You're the last resort. You will wait.
I don't know a lot about this movie.
It's based on the book 13 Hours, the inside account of what really happened in Benghazi, written by New York Times bestselling author Mitchell Zukov and co-authored by five members of the Annex security team, including Chris Peranto, John Tegan, and Mark Geist. I interviewed last month Tegan and Geist. 13 Hours tells the true story of the events of when the Islamic militants attacked the U.S. State Department Special Mission Compound and a CIA station called the Annex in Benghazi, Libya, from the personal stories of five of the surviving American private security operators who were on the ground that day. While it was not their job to protect the State Department, when the Annex security team found out that the U.S. diplomatic compound was under attack, they knew that they were that they had to help the fellow Americans, including U.S. Ambassador Stevens, that were in jeopardy.
Yeah, we know what happened there.
Their operators live by the code that Americans help other Americans overseas. So our interview is up on the site. So I talked with them about what happened, the aftermath of it, and where we go from here. The movie is directed by Michael Bay.
Ah, so it'll be subtle.
So, and we're seeing it, we're seeing it tonight and tomorrow. Uh-huh. But so far the early reviews are really good.
Good, good, good. Well,
and the real life heroes are very pleased with the movie.
Nice guys?
Very nice guys.
Okay.
Yeah, heroes. All
right, so we'll review that when we're back next week. And also this Friday, we've got Norm of the North, which I guess Kate Marquis will review Thursday night. That opens Friday.
That one.
I missed that one, doggone it. And Ride Along 2, which I will be reviewing Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Mm-hmm. That stars Kevin Hart and Ice Cube.
All the new dealers in Atlanta are getting supplied through Antonio Pope in Miami. You need to get me something on this guy.
2 days tops.
So get a team together and fix this.
Miami, James, I'm going.
Make sure you're back in time to make me Mrs. Blackhammer.
Hey, Ange, you know where my thongs are?
Check my top right drawer.
Wow. Oh, they were in my panty drawer, not yours.
In a small round table as they were getting ready. They were coming through their national Ride Along 2 tour, and they stopped in St. Louis and took in all the sights and had some,
Emo's Pizza,
we talked about that. St. Louis. And so they were very charming. They were very nice. There was about five St. Louis media folks there at the round table, like I said, at the hangar. And we talked about Ride Along 2 and the chemistry and them getting back together.
Mm-hmm. But you've seen it.
And I have seen it.
Is it good?
I think it's hilarious.
Did you see the first one?
I did. I was, and actually, I'm a fan of the first one. Okay. Quite frankly,
is it better than the first one, or is it about the same?
It's about the same. Okay. I think fans of this first one, of this, and I think Universal has a good has a really good start on a new cop buddy franchise. Quite frankly, for this kind of throwaway, kind of film, it stars Ice Cube, Kevin Hart, Ken Young, Benjamin Bratt, Olivia Munn, Bruce McGill, and Sherry Shepherd. And the sequel picks up about a year after our hero's, quote-unquote, last adventure. Plans for a quick trip to Miami go awry when their unorthodox policing get them into a compromising situation that threatens to derail a major case and Ben and Angela's upcoming wedding day.
Okay.
So
we're not going to be lost having not seen the first one.
Hopefully. Oh, no. They go after, when we last left Ben and James, they were barbecuing together with the family in the backyard after they had brought down the multinational crime ring led by legendary kingpin Omar, played by, in the original, Lawrence Fishburne. This time they go up against the a new drug lord, Benjamin Bratt.
Okay. Well, we'll...
Yeah, it's odd that they're deciding to release it in January. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd think this would be closer to maybe a spring break type movie. So
right.
Maybe this will play well for them, the strategy. Mm-hmm. So.
Plus, it's also around, it's coming around the three-day holiday that some people get from Martin Luther mm-hmm. King.
That's right, I forgot about that.
I think it'll do really well at the box office, whether it beats out, you know, Star Wars...
Remains
to be seen.
For the
number one spot, but it remains to be seen. But our interview's up. They were charming. They were as funny as they could be. And, yeah.
All right. So, we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. The worst movies of 2016. That's what we're going to talk about now.
I'd rather talk about the worst of 2015.
Right? Oh, 2015. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm spaced out here. Oh, yeah. All right. When are we putting up that article, Michelle, this weekend?
This week or next, depending.
All right. Yeah. Look for weirdmoviegeeks.com with a little more detail. But we're going to run down this list. The dishonorable mention, which is another name for number 11, is The Seventh Son. Anybody in this room see The Seventh Son?
I saw The Seventh Son with Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore.
I didn't see it.
And Alicia Vikander.
Oh, is she in that? You're kidding.
I forgot she was in that.
I did too.
Yeah, she would like The Forgiven.
I think Michael reviewed it for
us. It's just showing on HBO or Cinemax. I just caught it again and I go, oh yeah, this was just...
Okay, yeah. That was number 11 on our list. Number 10 was Tomorrowland. That was a sort of an epic failure there. Boy, that one really aimed high.
Yeah, that was my choice for biggest disappointment.
Yeah.
I really had high hopes going into it. You know,
well, it had George Clooney and
Brad Bird. Directed it, and it's, you know,
well, the trailer's so different, so much different. I thought we were going to be in Tomorrowland the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where we were in that movie. I couldn't even tell you. I saw that movie. I couldn't even tell you what it was about.
I had a little robot girl in it, and there were lots of chases, and you know, the trailer gave you that nice retro future look, and there's like a 5-minute sequence with that in the movie, and the rest of it's just this chase that just goes on.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. Number 9 was 50 Shades of Grey, which I would say was the most boring film of 2015. Boy, that movie just sat there.
And there's two more coming down the pipe.
Oh boy, and then there's a spoof.
Oh, yes. Yeah, 50 Shades of Black, is that it?
Yeah, okay.
That comes out this month.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to seeing
it. Wayans Brothers.
Yes, of course.
I'll see that. That looks better than 50 Shades of Grey. Although, I do like this Dakota Johnson. She's kind of cute. I saw her trailer for something else she's in. So, I don't begrudge her.
So, is it something like The Single Life or something she's got coming up with Rebel Wilson? Or How to Be Single?
Yeah, Warner Brothers. Yeah, it's coming out soon, though.
Yeah.
That was the most boring film. You know, there's different kinds of bad films. I mean, there's films that are kind of, you know, you can have fun with.
Right.
A film that didn't make our list was The Boy Next Door with J-Lo.
That's a fun bad movie.
Yeah, that's a fun bad movie. And, you know, the guy gives her, what was it, the first edition of The Odyssey.
Yeah, we talked about it.
It's stupid, really funny.
Stupid stuff like that. I mean, that was a bad movie, but, you know, I'd see that one again. But then there's offensive bad movies, and then there's pretentious, precious bad movies. I had Me and Earl, the Dying Girl on my list. It didn't make our We Are Movie Geeks list, but I think that was a kind of a pretentious, precious kind of movie that I just can't stand. But 50 Shades of Grey, I think, belongs in that boring. And Pan is number 8 on our list. I did not see Pan. Did you guys see Pan?
Yeah,
we saw Pan, yeah. It's
Why another Peter Pan Captain Hook movie?
It's
enough already.
Why sink $150 million into a...
Oh, it's just so dull.
Another costly mistake for Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
good night.
They're having a rough year at Warner's, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was number 8. Number 7 was The Longest Ride. I didn't see that one either. That was the Nicholas Sparks adaptation with the... Eastwood's son. What's his first name?
Scott
Eastwood.
Yeah. But the thing that was, and Jim and I have talked about this, The secondary story was kind of charming. Flashback was...
What was so bad about Longest Ride? I mean, would 13-year-old girls like it?
Yeah. He takes his shirt off.
Isn't that who it's aimed at?
Yeah. Actually, the female lead in it is Kimmy Robertson from Tomorrowland.
Oh, yeah.
She's having a rough year.
And guess what?
A rough start to her career.
Nicholas Sparks movie coming down.
The choice is the worst. Yeah. That's what I'll lead with.
All right.
Because the Nicholas Sparks seems to have like a formula, and I'm just tired of it.
I don't know if I've ever seen any of those films
suffered through his last four films
Was Labor Day based on one of his with Kate Winslet?
I had to watch The Lucky One with Zac Efron.
That's right.
Safe Haven with John.
And The Notebook, wasn't that Nicholas?
Lightning in a Bottle. That was the one.
But the rest of his stuff is like, ugh.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I'm looking at this list of ours, and there's no horror films on there. I mean, I could have populated a top 10 worst movies with a lot of horror films. I guess horror films are sort of like low-hanging fruit. They're easy to, easy to pick apart, and they're a dime a dozen. And
they don't show them to critics.
Yeah.
Usually, so.
I think I had the Lazarus Effect on my 10 worst. I think you had, what was it, The Gallows?
Yeah, Gallows, I think, was on.
And Michael, I believe, did too.
Yeah, so there's a lot of lousy horror movies, but they're almost not worth sticking in these lists because they're just too easy of targets. Let's go down to number six, Ted 2. I kind of like Ted 2. What do you guys have against Ted 2?
Well, it seemed kind of tired by the end of it. It seemed like he was just doing film references to thinking that just recreating film scenes from better films was funny.
Exactly.
I mean, it just wasn't. It wasn't the worst comedy sequel, though. I'll give it that. I think that would probably go to Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah,
too.
But that's not on our list.
No.
Ted should have just been the one movie.
It just made too much money.
Of course.
Okay, I liked it too. Aloha I did not see, but did you see Aloha, Michelle?
I did not.
Okay, Jim saw Aloha.
Oh, boy.
Did you review Aloha for us?
I believe I did, oh, my goodness.
That's a great
Cameron Crowe.
Cameron Crowe.
Yeah, that was...
He's made a lot of great
movies.
It didn't have a good idea behind it, and... It was just a big stumble for everybody. And really, casting Emma Stone as a woman that's half Hawaiian?
That's racism.
That would create a lot of, that ruffled a lot of feathers.
The character was just kind of annoying anyway. And then they add that in there, and I was like, oh, really? She's not annoying. She's still kind of charming, but there was only so much she could do with this poorly written character.
All right, so Cameron Crowe strikes out with Aloha. Number four, we got By the Sea. I gave By the Sea 4 out of 5stars. Did you see By the Sea?
I did eventually.
Yeah. Did you like it?
No.
I didn't like By the Sea.
It was duller, more dull to us than 50 Shades of Grey, because 50 Shades of Grey actually has a camp element to it.
Don't get me wrong. I like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Sure.
They've hit like the gene pool lottery, but
it was just them being miserable for 2 hours. Just went on and on.
So. Okay. Number three was Grandma. That was a very offensive film. In my opinion, that was one that promoted itself as a wacky comedy about an old lady who spends the day with her pregnant granddaughter, but actually it was a really awful drama about a woman who takes her granddaughter to get an abortion. It wasn't remotely funny, and Lily Tomlin was about the most unpleasant, abrasive, obnoxious character I saw on the big screen in 2015. Grandma. Okay. Two was Love the Coopers.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun. This kind of is in the almost in the Boys Next Door category.
But it, when a comedy's bad, boy, it's
worse.
Boy Next Door is trying to be a thriller and trying to be really intense, and it's just silly. And this is wanting to be precious and heartwarming, and it just falls flat.
And it did so well at the box office.
Yeah, well, there's just no other Christmas movies out there to see.
Yeah, people just want to see the pretty lights on the screen and everything, and a movie with a big cast, and everyone is just completely
wasted. Everybody's terrible in it. I mean, Diane Keaton. She just screeches all her lines.
And that weird subplot with Marissa Tomei and Anthony Mackie is just very odd. And Amanda Seyfried, who was also in Ted 2, she's back on with this one. Yeah. And just a wasted character. Alan Arkin playing Diane Keaton's a father? Really?
Yeah.
I never bought that.
Well, the Coopers was number 2. And number 1 on our list, drum roll please, The number one worst movie, according to Weird Movie Geeks, of 2015. Was Fantastic Four. What a disaster that one was. The worst, I guess the worst Marvel
superhero. Still wanted to love it.
Well, you wanted, you put on there, Michelle, as your biggest disappointment, as it kept on, all the bad press was coming towards, you know, the premiere of it. Did you actually think it was going to be good? I never thought it was, you know,
even
everything.
I was even wary with the trailers. Yeah,
everything I saw about it, everything I read about it, I was like, this is just awful. this is the train wreck.
I couldn't get back to my TV fast enough to watch the earlier version.
Yeah, and those earlier versions were no great shakes.
Yeah.
And Chris Evans.
Well, it was all origin story. I mean, by the time they got to the Fantastic Four and they're in their uniforms and doing their superpowers, and 10 minutes later it was over, yeah.
And it's so dark and dreary. Ugh.
All right. Well, hopefully, so there was a lot of bad movies in 2015, actually.
Yes.
When I first made my list, I wrote down like 20 movies.
Oh, yes. And Saint Laurent did not make it. And one that we both dislike so much, We Are Your Friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was way up high on my list.
Oh,
that was awful. Zac Efron.
And Stonewall.
Stonewall, I think I had my biggest disappointment. Boy, that was a disaster on many, many levels. Uh-huh. All right. Well, hopefully 2016 will be better. The Oscar noms are come out on Thursday, but the Golden Globes, which I guess would you say that's the second most prestigious of the film awards?
It's not prestigious. It's a
big, you know, TV show. Big, you know.
All right. Well, that was
TV movies.
That was a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it. I got the Blu-ray of Tobe Hooper's Eaten Alive and decided to watch that instead.
I guess
because I really don't care about the Golden Globe.
It's fun to watch just for the host and what they're going to say, and then, you know, the stars are all drunk by the time the show starts.
Yeah.
What they're going to do and who's not going to show up, like, you know. That year when Robin Williams had to come up when Christy Lottie was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So
did they have a Miss Golden Globe this year?
Yes, that was Jamie Foxx's daughter.
Okay. They do. This
Lovely
was the 73rd annual Golden Globes. The big winners of the night were The Revenant and The Martian. It's worth of note, both of those films were released by 20th Century Fox. Now, while The Martian was in the category and it won for best picture, musical or comedy,
yeah.
With the trade papers now that are out, like, you know, Monday morning, 20th Century Fox can say we won both picture categories.
Mm.
So I understand why it's there. And the book, some of it is humorous. Some of his lines are kind of funny. I mean, the stuff with the whole disco thing in Martian.
Yeah, there are funny moments in it.
There are funny moments.
Yeah.
I grant you that.
But it's not a comedy.
No, of course not. No. And even Ridley Scott said as much on the...
But that kind of takes away from their credibility a little bit, you know, for certain.
I think the best thing of the night was when Sylvester Stallone won.
Yes, Sly Stallone.
That was great. They played Rocky. People were on their feet.
He is a contender for supporting actor for Creed. Yeah, because it was nice that he got that. It was... a little disappointing. I was hoping that Alicia Vikander would pick up supporting for Ex Machina. Instead, it went to Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs.
See, and that's a Hollywood Foreign Press for you.
Yeah, they love Aaron Sorkin. They gave him best screenplay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the movie just didn't, you know, find its audience at all. I don't know if it will.
No,
but
half the people that did find didn't like it.
That's true. And, another odd choice was Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. I think it's just because they like her quite a bit. I think there were much more worthy comedic performances in there. I would have thought her buddy Amy Schumer would have gotten it.
That would have been great.
But that did not happen. But Jennifer Lawrence is good in Joy, but it's, you know, after, you know, Silver Linings Playbook.
Enough already.
And, you know, it's not enough already. It's just that this you know, didn't show her talents to the degree those earlier films did. So it's kind of an odd choice, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But pleased to see Stallone there. Very happy about Brie Larson getting an award for
Room. Me too.
That was a great choice.
And she looked great.
She looked great that night.
So
she's definitely maybe in the, you know, maybe her and Cate Blanchett are the front runners pretty much in Best Actress, I guess. And and Leo picking up the big trophy
and he had a really good speech too. I was so happy that Ridley Scott was a part of like The Martian. He could actually, you know, because now he's thankfully after the Gladiator debacle of him not being a producer. He's a producer on all his films. So anything that his film wins from here on out, he'll be able to go up to the podium.
Yeah.
So I was glad to at least hear his speech.
And another one for Inarritu for Best Director.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Did he win last year?
Was it him or Linklater last year? I guess it was him. I don't know if Linklater was in the comedy category last year for Boyhood. He might have been. I don't know, those wacky.
Yeah, but it's just one director.
Press people.
But just one director category.
Yeah.
Right. When are the Oscars?
The Oscars are February 28th.
Mm-hmm. February 28th.
And we will be there. And actually, we will be
there. You will be there.
I will be there. And we will also be Thursday morning at the Oscar nominations announcement.
Is that a Sunday night? So you can call in.
I will call in on Monday. I definitely will call on Monday.
Right. Yeah, so are they at 5:30 a.m. in West Coast time?
The nominations?
Yeah.
Yes, those will be Thursday morning at 5:30, and they're going to do them in two segments, and the Academy announced yesterday, they started running their TV promos. They also sent us the one sheet, the poster, the new poster. So they announced that Ang Lee, Guillermo del Toro, and John Krasinski will be there with Academy President Cheryl Boone Isaacs to announce the nominations. So, but as of 5 p.m. on Friday, the voters had their ballots in. AMPIS members received their ballots on December 30th. Since then, many of the major guilds have announced their nominees, as well as the BAFTA awards. So while we were on our break, the BAFTAs also were announced.
What are the BAFTAs? Oh, that's the British?
The British Academy Awards. And that's always very telling because there are a lot of BAFTA members that cross over to Academy members. So the nominations for the 88th Annual Academy Awards will be revealed Thursday morning.
And we have some predictions, don't we?
Yes. And We Are Movie Geeks will once again be at the Samuel Goldwyn Theater with other domestic and international outlets covering the morning's announcements.
Nifty. All right. So who do we think are going to get all the big noms? We've got a list.
There we go. We're going to post that on Wednesday.
All right. Let's see.
So we got 8 possible Best Picture ones.
But it can be as many as 10. Isn't that
five
right?
to ten.
5 to 10. So you guys think it's going to be 8? You guys think it's going to be Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max, Big Short, Martian, Revenant, Spotlight, Straight Out of Compton.
What do you guys think?
I don't know. I don't see Straight Out of Compton getting in there.
It might have lost its steam by now.
It got a Producers Guild, and so that's, I think, why I kind of threw it in there.
I think Star Wars will be in there.
I know. That's why I was wondering. Where do you guys think Carol and Star Wars will land?
Carol's not getting much love lately.
Yeah. Got shut out of the Globes the other day. So I think Star Wars maybe has a chance.
Yeah. And Carol may have a chance, but I don't know. That's a pretty good list, I guess. I'm not sure about Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
It's just across the board, it's been showing up in a lot of the guilds. And so the guilds also were Academy voter.
They like Spielberg. And I remember and Munich was nominated for Best Picture. I think that was kind of a surprise when that happened.
Yeah. Now, for actor in a leading role, it's back down to 5. You've got Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon for The Martian, Johnny Depp for Black Mass, Leo for The Revenant, and Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
We're not so sure about Johnny
Depp. I don't think there's any way Johnny Depp's going to get nominated.
So do you think it's Eddie Redmayne?
I think it would definitely be Eddie Redmayne. Maybe Ian McKellen.
I'm not sure about Bryan Cranston. I could see Ian McKellen and Eddie Redmayne getting in there instead of Depp and Cranston.
I base these off of the Screen Actor Guild nominations.
Okay.
So that's a tough category. It's hard to say who's going to be snubbed and who's going to be in.
Yeah, there's always a snub or two that
which is even better than actually who got in. But I like the Ian McKellen.
That would be nice.
I like that.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So
Eddie Redmayne just won last year, so he's not going to win. So it'll probably come down to Leo or Matt.
Yeah, I think it's a two-person race on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are we going over to supporting actor?
Supporting
actor. You've got Christian Bale for The Big Short.
Mm-hmm.
Idris Elba, Beast of No Nation, Mark Ruffalo, Spotlight, Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies, Sly Stallone, Creed.
With an alternate of Jacob Tremblay, the young lad from The Room.
It wouldn't surprise me if they put Harrison Ford in there for Star Wars.
That would be a big shock.
Wow, wouldn't that?
I don't think it'd be a shock at all. I mean, look at how much
really
money.
Would.
Everybody loves the guy. He's like 70 years old now.
But he's not been showing up. They kept the movie under wraps, so it wasn't able to.
And what happens to his character? you know, he won't be back for the sequels. Not that I'm giving anything away. But I think Stallone's got to be the front runner here by a long shot.
I would say so.
He created this character. I mean, who's not going to want to see him run up there to the Rocky theme and finally win his Oscar for this character? He was nominated for playing the same character 40 years ago. He's made a lot of money for Hollywood and made a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I don't know. His conservative politics aren't going to help him. But
I think they'll be on that. I think Keaton could be a possibility also for Spotlight. So, I think more so than maybe Ford. So,
So now let's move over to performance by an actress in a leading role. Our predictions are Alicia Vikander, Ex Machina. Alicia Vikander, Danish Girl, Broy Larson, Room, Kate Blanchett, Carol Charlotte Rampling, 45 years.
Saoirse
Ronan for Brooklyn. Maggie Smith is your alternate for Lady in the Band. Has anybody seen that, Lady in the Band?
No.
We've had a few people see it.
Oh, okay. So, I can see Maggie Smith getting in there.
I'm not so sure about Charlotte since she didn't get a Golden Globe.
And I don't see Alicia Vikander getting in there for Danish Girl. I think they'll probably put her in there for Ex Machina and supporting and skip her for lead.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. Brie Larson seems to be a lock. Kate Blanchett's probably a lock. And Miss Ronan is probably a lock.
Yeah, the Jennifer Lawrence could sneak in
for Joy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, but I would say, I guess Miss Larson's probably the front runner. She probably should be thankful that Cate Blanchett has just won 2 years ago, or she would probably be the front runner.
And like I said, a lot of this was based on the Screen Actors Guild nominations and the recently announced BAFTA noms. So...
All right, well, we'll see on Thursday.
Actress in a supporting role, we went with Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Kate Winslet, Steve Jobs, Rooney Mara for Carol, with the alternate being Julie Walters for Brooklyn.
I think that's a pretty strong list, those five there. I think that, I have a problem with Winslet's performance and Steve Jobs. Yeah. I think it's kind of, all over the place. But I would see those five in there, definitely. And here's hoping that they go to five nominations for Best Animated Feature because we know there were plenty of good ones.
Mm-hmm. I think they will.
So your predictions were Anomalisa,
mm-hmm.
Inside Out, Minions, Shaun the Sheep, and the Peanuts movie.
Yeah.
I would put Good Dinosaur over the Minions. Yeah, that's your ultimate.
Yeah. Okay. But if they go to three, it's probably not going to... It'll be Anomalisa,
but this is
Inside
the category
Out, and Shaun the Sheep.
They always find They find an overseas, like a smaller, hand-drawn, more intimate...
Japanese.
Animated feature to throw in. Yeah. Whether it's European or...
Yeah, I can't think of what that movie
I don't know who they're going to spit out.
Anomalisa is the oddball movie. It's odd enough, so.
Yeah.
Maybe
they need to kind of give it some recognition without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, nomination will be a nice recognition for Anomalisa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cinematography, we went with Bridge of Spies, Janusz Kaminski, number two, Carol, which Ed Lockman just, that was such a beautiful film. Number three, we went with Mad Max Fury Road with John Seal, his great work, The Revenant, Emmanuel Lubezki. This would be his third consecutive win nomination. Well, he's been nominated before, but if he was to win, that would be his third win. And Roger Deakins for Sicario. Good night. That guy can't win for love of money. And the alternate, we went with Creed, who I interviewed the woman cinematographer, mm-hmm. Maurice Alberti.
Would she be the first woman nominated in that category?
I believe so. Yeah. Yes. Really? I don't think we've ever had. Yes.
I think they'll give it to John Seal for Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
He came out of retirement.
I think it's between that and Revenant. Yeah.
Right.
Those two, definitely.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yes. Sure.
Best costume design. What about Crimson Peak? I thought that had some pretty nice costumes.
Yeah. There's always a couple flops they throw
Carol,
in
Carol, Cinderella, Danish Girl, Brooklyn, Mad Max for costume.
With Suffragette as the alternate.
Suffragette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. Cinderella was kind of a fun film.
Yeah.
Danish Girl. I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on this category.
Yep.
Shall we move on? Director, sure. Let's go. Adam McKay, Big Short, Mad Max, Fury Road would be George Miller, mm-hmm. Carol Todd Haynes, The Martian, Ridley Scott, The Revenant, Alejandro Iñárritu. And you've got Bridge of Spies, Steven Spielberg, alternate. I don't see Spielberg getting in there this year.
So that one maybe we change to Tom McCarthy for Spotlight since he just got the DGA nom.
Yeah. So that's bringing him up there.
Well, Fury Road and Revenant are locks. Ridley Scott's probably a lock.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about Adam McKay. I don't know. There's a couple of slots.
The last couple of years, it seems like the DJ they're and the Oscar nom are always off by one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if it matches up 5-5, hey, great.
I remember when they were way off with Argo, that's for sure. Years ago.
That
was just, what?
That was wild.
Yeah. So we got Best Documentary Feature. We got Amy, Cartelland, Going Clear, He Named Me Malala, The Look of Silence, with the alternative being The Hunting Ground.
Wait a minute, what about the story of Canon Films, Electric Boogaloo?
If they'd open it for more than one night, then people could have seen it. I have a feeling it's going to go to Amy for this one. Although sure that Malala will have a big following. But
yeah, and that girl will be
can
there.
Can you see The Hunting Ground because of,
too much controversy.
Okay. That's why we kind of left it.
Yeah. Best Editing, Mad Max has this one.
Yeah,
over a lock.
Yeah, Big Short has got
big
some
Short's
good editing.
Big Short's good editing, but nothing like Mad Max. Yeah. Spotlight, mm-hmm. The Martian, The Revenant. We have to move along here. Best Foreign Language Film, Son of Saul, which we still haven't seen.
That category's like done with already. Yeah. They might as well just start engraving that.
Yeah. Labyrinth of Lies, Mustang, A War, and Viva. I have seen zero of these five foreign films.
I have seen...
Alternate is Thebe.
I have seen two of them. Okay. Yeah. So, yes.
I think Mustang's still over at the Tivoli.
It is, yes.
Son of Saul, just that's going to win.
All right. And let's see. Now we're makeup and hairstyling. Who cares? Let's move on. No, I'm just kidding. Mad Max... Black Mass, Revenant. Oh, yeah, I guess they made Johnny Depp look up like, what's his name? So, good job, Mr. Holmes. Best score. There's a lot of good scores this year.
There were some great scores.
Thomas Newman, Bridge of Spies, Carter Burwell, Carol, Morricone, Hateful Eight, Sicario, and Star Wars, John Williams. Yeah, I think Morricone's a bit of a shoo-in. Everybody loves him. He's never won. He's been nominated many, many times. He's in his 80s.
He's received an honorary one.
Yeah,
and
John Williams is in his 80s, too, with these old men out there making these incredible scores. So we think it's going to be Morricone. These are just the nominations, though, so I don't know where we're getting ahead of ourselves by picking the winners. Best Song, See You Again, Simple Song 3 from Youth, Earned It from 50 Shades, Till It Happened to You from The Hunting Ground, Writings on the Walls. This is another Who Cares in my book. Best Visual Effects, Jurassic World, Mad Max, Martian, The Walk, Star Wars. And Revenant or Ant-Man is...
And the Academy just had their annual bake-off where they show about 5 to 10 films. So we were basing it off of that. And from those, I think it's like 8 films, then they decide on the 5.
Okay. Adapted Screenplay, The Big Short, The Martian, Carol, Steve Jobs, Trumbo, Alternate Room.
That's pretty strong list. I think Room has a better chance than Trumbo, really.
Okay, yeah, I think The Martian may win that one. An original screenplay, Bridge of Spies, Spotlight, Straight Outta Compton, Trainwreck, Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight should win, but they'll probably give it to Spotlight. All right, so that is our predictions for the Oscar nominations. We'll be back next week to talk about how close we were, and we'll also be back next week to talk about 13 Hours and Ride Along 2, and I can even talk a little bit about Kung Fu Panda 3, which I'm saying this weekend. But we're going to have to sign off for now. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
Be sure to listen to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast, again next week.
Black leather, black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather, black leather, rock rock rock. Black leather, black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather, black leather, hip hip hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.